Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
He is a gorilla of destiny, a Bullet Club OG, continuing on the legacy of the most feared name in all of wrestling. From Tonga to Japan to America, you are now entering Tama's Island. With your host, the babyface heel, Tama Tonga.
Welcome back to Tama's Island Podcast. I'm your host, Tama Tonga. My co-host, Ross Berman, the culture vulture, guys, we got two guests brought in from Tama's Island. Welcome, Gary. Welcome, Scott. Thank you for joining us here today. We are going to talk wrestling. We're going to talk whatever, space. Whoever, whatever, stars, fish, ocean, whatever you want to talk about, we're going to talk about right here. But most importantly, we're going to talk shit about wrestling. See what's going on. What's popping over here? Ross, what's new, man? What's new?
Hey, man, as I feel like I say this every week on this podcast, but what isn't new? It has been another bloodbath in WWE last week. On Friday during SmackDown, they released not one, not two, but nearly a dozen different talents, some of whom were scheduled for matches later in that evening on 205 Live. Most of these talents coming from the NXT brand, and it does sound like, according to the Wrestling Observer Radio, that NXT might be getting a little reconfigured. We might be heading to the point where NXT may be brought back to that FCW style developmental, the focus being back on Raw, the focus being back on SmackDown, the focus being back on the WWE brands, and more importantly, sports entertainment. A lot of the people that WWE has been releasing lately have been of that pro wrestling variety that that Triple H seems to have been fond of over the past, 6 years of NXT. But guys like Bronson Reed, who recently had a title run, guys like Tyler Rust, who recently debuted in a new faction that has a heavy push on NXT television, it just seems like they were cut with wanton abandon. I'm going to throw to you, Tama, first, because, like, damn, it looked brutal as hell. What was the kind of vibe from the wrestling world as this was happening?
Cold-blooded, damn. I'm telling you, WWE is on one right now. They don't give a dime about anything. I mean, dudes are advertised to wrestle that night or the next night, and yep, they fired him on the spot. So, fuck your couch. That's what I see, man. It's so cold. Icy in my veins. Damn, man. It's fucked up. It sucks. Yeah, I feel for the wrestlers, man. It sucks, but you know, I like to look at the brighter side. Yo, Bronson, man, my man was already doing work before he went over there. I know he knows how to grind. I can't wait to see him back on it on the outside, because he knows how it goes, man. He's a veteran out there in Japan, and you know, hopefully I can see him over there on my side again. Other guys, man, I feel bad for Zane. Zane just went in not too long ago, right?
Yep. Alex Zane, formerly Ari Sterling in the WWE. Yeah, he was a talent that seemed to be breaking out right before the pandemic. Mm-hmm. WWE signing him in the middle of the pandemic almost felt like this olive branch to the indies of, like, let's get this talent on the right track. And then he just never got a chance to get any kind of traction or footing or anything. Like, they just seemed to really keep him in that warehouse and then cut him when the going got tough. A brutal, and in the middle of a show too. It felt like they were like, if we release people in the middle of SmackDown, maybe it won't garner as much response. And it seems to have garnered like twice as much. Like, normally they do a bunch of releases, everyone goes, ow, that's cold. But this led to like a delayed finding out. There were some people who are deep in SmackDown, and then they get on Twitter and realize, holy shit, they just cut half of 205 Live.
It reminds me of the time that, you know, during the pandemic, CIA was like, oh, by the way, there's aliens. Anyways, yep. Oh my yep. goodness, get your shot. Yep. Somebody, there's you need to yes. get that the corona is serious, people. So that's dude, what I feel like. You're like trying to yep. right under, you know?
Yep. You're spot on. Like they had, it was announced less than a month ago that Nick Khan and Vince McMahon were going to visit the Performance Center and kind of look at the state of the NXT roster. And now that is looking more and more like when you go to Red Lobster and there are lobsters in the tank and you're like, I want that one. Like it really, it seemed like a lot of stuff that sounded like good news for NXT over the past month turned into actually just them casing the place to steal what they could from the roster, maybe get them on the main roster. And then it really feels like they're getting punished for that NXT AEW ratings war that they lost so soundly. I want to kind of throw it to Scott and Gary. Scott, what do you kind of think of the state of not only the releases on Friday, but just the NXT brand in general?
It's just such a shame. I mean, if you look at NXT a couple of years ago, it was the brand to watch. Mm-hmm. It had all the excitement, all the hype, and you know, I don't know what changed about it or why they didn't, you know, feel they could move forward with that. But, it just seems like once they did the move to the Wednesday nights and they tried to counter program against AEW, it's like they just gave up on it. And it's just such a shame to see it go because it was so fun for so many years.
It really was. I mean, as someone who was kind of waning on wrestling right before the network launched and therefore also NXT launched into a larger audience, that was one of the things that hooked me back was, you may not like WWE all the time, but NXT was pretty damn solid, whether it be a paper, whether it be the weekly show or whether it be just hugely successful takeover events that they were running. Gary, what do you kind of think of not only the state of the NXT brand, but just WWE just cutting anyone and everyone?
I feel like they should have focused on their own product instead of like trying to compete with AEW, because once they got to their network, they just been killing it lately. Mm-hmm. They should have just focused on their own product and not just trying to like counterpick AEW.
I could not agree with you more. I mean, especially when you look at the success AEW has had from just focusing on their promotion. Like, that, don't get me wrong, they have thrown some barbs at WWE over the past couple of years, but most of those barbs are on Twitter. Most of those barbs are in being the elite. Sometimes they'll throw something onto the main show, but for the most part, those jokes are for the people that are already huge fans of AEW and the Elite, who are already following the YouTube shows, who are already watching Twitter, and so you don't see them going full-blown like in the mid-90s when WWF had the Ted Turner sketches, the Billionaire Ted and Ski and Gene and all that. You don't see AEW going that route. They focus on their own product, and their ratings have been going up and up ever since. If NXT had done that instead of trying to become this facsimile of what WWE imagined AEW fans wanting, I feel like they could have maybe survived a little longer, but they were still doing fine. Like, the ratings weren't great. They weren't AEW ratings, but they were still charting every week. They were still making, you know, inroads with their main demo, and now they've kind of cut off the head despite the face of NXT. I don't know. It's very sad. It feels very petty, especially when you see stuff like Dakota Kai is now the number one contender for the NXT Women's Championship, right? And so that's great. She's going to go on to TakeOver 36, have a great match. But if you're reading the main event spoilers, Dakota Kai, for some reason, has lost on main event on the road to NXT TakeOver 36. And so there doesn't seem to be this jiving between the WWE and NXT. It almost feels like WWE saying you is punishing them not only for the loss, but for being that alternative, for almost turning WWE, threatening to turn WWE into a pro wrestling company. I mean, hell, right now they are in a bidding war for Adam Cole. This is, don't get me wrong, he's a great sports entertainer, but that is a pro wrestling personality, and you got to believe that there's a little bit of Vince saying, oh, what is my son-in-law turned us into? I don't know. It feels very it feels like WWE is going through an identity crisis at the worst time to be going through an identity crisis. I don't know.
I agree with Scott, man. They were hot, man. They were hot. They were outdoing. I felt like during WrestleMania weekend, they were outdoing WrestleMania to a certain extent. They were hot, man. I don't know what happened. What happened? The booker changed? Who? What happened? I know now that John Laurinaitis is head of that department, isn't he? Or is there still
they're moving Laurinaitis into more of a developmental head of developmental role. He's recruiting on TikTok now, apparently. Yeah. Like, which I go for it. You know, maybe anything's possible, but it does feel like Laurinaitis is reaching out to people that aren't already in wrestling, people that they can make into wrestlers.
Now, if I'm correct, they did this before. They did this, not a TikTok, but Laurinaitis had, so when NXT was developmental, right? This was 2010-8 all the way up to 13, 12, something like that. Yep. Right. So what they did was they went and grabbed football players, basketball players. They did this kind of like tactic. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to think now who is still here from that time, because that was Bray Wyatt's class right there. Because I remember my brother was in it. There was like Bo Dallas. There was this class, but they had, I remember I even went out for a trial and I saw these basketball players, these football players. I'm trying to remember anybody who's still, I don't remember anybody. Mojo was part of that class too.
Yep. Mojo was part of that class. One person actually who I think that was kind of a football player they brought into wrestling. I may need to look more into his background, but who's actually had a lot of success right now on the main roster, Baron Corbin. This is a guy who played on the Arizona Cardinals and then was brought into the WWE because of his size and because of his his pro football career. And he has, I think, been one of the best like housemaid acts that WWE has had, especially now that he's in this broke ass Baron Corbin needs money, can't even get into the building kind of he can't even afford entrance music. Like it's some gripping television. So like I'm not knocking grabbing the basketball players and the football players, but it feels like Baron Corbin is more an exception that proves the rule than necessarily proof that yes, this works, that we can grab anyone and turn them into a wrestler. I don't know. It seems, I mean, outside of Roman Reigns, who was going to be probably a wrestler based on his heritage anyway. I mean, he came from a wrestling family. Mm-hmm. He was technically a football player that they turned into a wrestler. So was The Rock technically. But again, they have such ties to the wrestling industry that you can't really be like, oh, yeah, well, they're outside guys that they turned into wrestlers, you know?
Now they're grabbing from TikTok. TikTok, like you got to be a little showman to be on this, right? And that's what the game is entertainment. And now if they can entertain, do this on their own platform and entertain, I can see them doing kind of coming into wrestling. That's just me, because everybody, or at least wrestlers, say you can teach wrestling to anybody, right? But to get charisma, to have charisma and all that, that's something that needs to come wherever you pick that up outside before you come in, I guess.
Yep. And you're spot on, because when you think about it, like, I don't think that John Laurinaitis is maybe not going to find another Adam Cole on TikTok, but you know who he's going to definitely find another Reginald on TikTok. And you can say what you want. You can say what you want to about the WWE 24/7 title scene or whatever, but that is a damn entertaining group of guys. Like, I mean, when you really look at what Reginald has been able to build as kind of a following, like, there is something to be said about grabbing these charismatic folks. And if there is now this pro wrestling alternative, if NXT doesn't need to be the beacon in the pro wrestling world anymore, why not let them try it out? Because NXT has always been a WWE product, so that means they've always been losing a certain amount of money trying to bring back pro wrestling. When now Vince can just kind of say, look, let AEW find out if pro wrestling is viable. I'm going to keep doing the sports entertainment stuff, and they will either have great success and good for them, or they will not have great success and I will buy them like I did WCW. And so, like, there's no losing for Vince with AEW. I don't know, Scott, what do you kind of think of the WWE's recent trend towards more of the entertainment side of sports entertainment?
Well, the one thing I was thinking about that when you guys were talking about is maybe that's what they're looking for now. Maybe they're going for more of personality as opposed to talent, because that's what you had with your independent guys. You had a ton of talent, but not always a lot of personality. So that's a very good point. Maybe they're thinking, let's go more for the characters, the personality. I mean, you were talking about finding people like via TikTok. I mean, I know what, a couple of years ago, one of Tom's favorite wrestlers, Enzo Amore, didn't they find him because he sent in some video clips
yep.
that he had done?
Yep.
But I mean, look at the personality, look how over he was. Maybe that's what they're thinking. All right, we've had the guys that do the flippy flips and stuff, but they didn't have that thing that grabbed you. So maybe that's what they're going to go for now.
Mm-hmm. No, and you make a very good point, because like people love personality. I mean, that's what CM Punk's theme song is all about, is like, if you got that personality, people will follow you to the depths of hell. I mean, look at Conor McGregor. The man is under investigation for actual crimes, and there are people who are actually like, you know what, I still love the guy, he's got that swagger, you know, that there are people who will still defend the guy that shot Meg the Stallion because he's got swagger. Like, that's just the cult of personality is very real. Gary, what do you kind of think of this kind of trend towards the more entertainment side of WWE?
I feel like maybe I never would have thought they would have gone that direction, because, you know, it's like entertainment. So, I mean, you need to get guys that are like, you know, mm-hmm. who can do this type of business.
Yep.
So my thing is that you got guys, you're getting guys from who do basketball, football, and all that mm-hmm. other stuff, and not really focusing on talent. So
It definitely feels like there is that push-pull, especially with wrestling, because there are some wrestling fans who are like, I'm all about the entertainment side of it. There are some wrestling fans who, man, you can get Bad Bunny, Goldberg, and all of the like big entertainment stars in there, and they still won't give a shit. They want Daniel Garcia versus Wheeler Yuta going 60 mm-hmm. minutes in a small, you know, like that. The different strokes kind of run the world, and I think this is WWE kind of figuring out which strokes have always made them money. Because like NXT has always been a very good project for keeping WWE from looking like they're absolutely ending pro wrestling in the name of sports entertainment. Because they've got NXT UK, they've got these pro wrestling products, and now the pro wrestling business is really booming right now. I mean, we've got AEW doing great shows. New Japan is coming back to the United States, and the ticket sales are strong. MLW has some real decent buzz about them. Like, there is this palpable pro wrestling business, and so WWE is probably looking at a lot of the people that they haven't used in a while and saying, screw it, let them go make some money elsewhere. They're not going to make WWE money, or maybe they will. Who knows? It depends on your hustle sometimes. But it definitely feels like, especially with the NXT cuts, it's a message to pro wrestling. But then there are some you can't explain. Your Bray Wyatts, your Braun Strowmans, your WWE characters, where those feel almost specifically designed for like cutting the budget, for freeing up some cash for I don't know what. Either they're getting rid of the overhead so they can sell the company, freeing up some cash so they can sign a big, big name like a McGregor or like an Omega or whoever. And like finding different ways to maybe create that buzz. Because look, we are 2 years into the AEW-WWE war, and clearly signing everyone hasn't worked. So they have to reconfigure their strategy. And maybe this is the way they do it. And before we move on, I want to throw to Scott and Gary any final thoughts on the kind of state of WWE at the moment, because we're heading towards SummerSlam. We're heading, the crowds are back. This seems like a time when they should be doing no wrong. How do you kind of feel WWE has been handling the return to live events, especially with all of this chaos in the news? Scott first, I'll throw it to you.
Yeah, well, it's tough for me as a fan to just to get on board with them right now because of all the background stuff that's going on. But maybe that's because I read too mm-hmm. much and look too much. But even the product itself, I just haven't found very interesting for quite some time. So I don't know, maybe this is their way to reshift, reevaluate, refocus on their top names, and maybe they'll come out of it with a better product. So we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, all right, I'm throwing you, Gary. Come on, what do you think? State of WWE, love it, hate it? Meh.
This is a meh at best.
Yeah.
I feel like they're making too many cuts, mm-hmm. unnecessary cuts, really. You got mm-hmm. you letting guys go like Bobby Fish, Tyler Russ, like hell, even Bray Wyatt, like that really confused me there. Like
I'm with you. It makes it hard to like even as much stuff that I think they're doing right, like I like Roman Reigns versus John Cena. I'm in the minority, but I like Goldberg versus Bobby Lashley. But even I can't really be like, I can't buy into it because I don't know who's going to still be there in a month. And that's the kind of thing that, like, the only thing that can help that is not cutting people for like 3 months. And the way everyone's talking, it doesn't sound like they're gonna stop anytime soon. And so it's this weird roller coaster ride, I think, with WWE right now. I mean, Tom, as we kind of move off this subject, what do you think of WWE on the road to SummerSlam right now?
Oh, I'm enjoying the fire. That's it. Yeah. I'll keep it warm on the fire. Keep it burning.
It's true. A good fire will keep you nice and warm, and especially in this business, you always need some heat. Now, speaking of business, since we're talking about companies kind of going through stuff at the moment, little bit of news that broke just today that has kind of added some fuel to the fire that things are not well down.
Using the internet without ExpressVPN is like driving a car without car insurance. Why would you want to take that risk? Any hacker can get on the same network, gain access to your personal data, and that's that. It doesn't take much technical knowledge to hack someone, just some cheap hardware. Even an educated 12-year-old can do it. Let's face it, your data is valuable. Hackers can make up to $1,000 per person just selling your personal info on the dark web. So that's why you need to use ExpressVPN. It acts as personal online insurance that creates a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet. That means hackers can't steal your personal data, can't make money off you, and it's super secure. It'd take a hacker with a supercomputer over a billion years to get past ExpressVPN's encryption. It's super simple. All you have to do is fire up the app, click one button, and boom. You're protected. It works on all your devices, your phone, your computer, your tablets. You can stay secure on the go.
So, Tama, tell the folks at home why you like to use ExpressVPN.
Peace of mind, Ross. Knowing that I'm protected with everything that I do online, with banking and whatnot, I love knowing that I'm being protected. I've had issues in the past, and with ExpressVPN, I know my data is protected. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/Tama. That's ExpressVPN.com/Tama. And you can get an extra 3 months free. ExpressVPN.com/Tama.
South of the border in old CMLL. Just yesterday, CMLL announced that Sanson, Quatrero, and Forestrero, a popular trio, was going to be the main event of their August 13th Arena Mexico show. 24 hours later, all three of them have announced they've left the promotion. Not only have they left the promotion, but Soberano Jr., another CMLL talent, has gotten on Twitter to say that who is hurting CMLL right now, in fact, his words were who is killing CMLL right now, are Ultimo Guerrero and superstars of his ilk. He has said there's no problem with the family that runs CMLL. They've always been good to him, but it sounds like something's rotten down in Arena Mexico. You even got Dragon Lee and Roosh already reaching out to the guys who have left, saying, come on up to ROH, it's great. Apparently one of the big sticking points, CMLL took zero care of anyone who got COVID over the course of the pandemic, just really kind of leaving everyone kind of out to dry. I'm going to throw to you, Tama, first, because you wrestled in CMLL. That was your excursion, and New Japan,
yeah.
CMLL. That partnership has been long and historic. What do you kind of think of this news that they're up against the ropes at the moment?
You know what? I haven't been keeping up with CMLL with the new transition to the new bosses, right? But when Paco was there, rest his soul. Mm-hmm. When Paco was there, that, you know, things was smooth, things was great. The relationship between New Japan and CMLL was strong. I'm not saying that it's not right now, but mm-hmm. I think I went down like 3-4 times, and then the last couple times I went with my brother, it was beautiful. It's perfect. Mm-hmm. You know, I love the experience, and but I don't know what the state in the state is right now. And I don't know how, I don't have anything to say really about it, because I just don't know, man.
And that's fair. We're not going to do a full 20-minute discussion on this the way we did with WWE, because there are still so many parts that are kind of moving around. For those that are not familiar, Paco that Tom just brought up is Paco Alonso, the former owner of CMLL, who passed away in 2019. It sounds like since his death, it hasn't been an easy time for CMLL, but they've always been keeping on. But earlier this year, I believe it was, CMLL and Ring of Honor ended their partnership after a number of luchadors from Ring of Honor tried to form their own wrestling promotion in Mexico. So it does seem that, especially on the North American side of things, CMLL, ROH not necessarily getting along on the best terms, especially with Dragon Lee reaching out and saying, come on up, we'll take care of you, the way that CMLL didn't. But I'm just more shocked at the fact that heading into the pandemic, it felt like ROH was on the ropes, CMLL could do no wrong, and now we are a year and a half later, and it has been completely, completely flipped. Scott, I know you're a big ROH fan. You've been, especially during the pandemic, you've been following along with how they have kind of adapted to it. Am I wrong? You were at one of their most recent events, right?
Yeah. I was at the pay-per-view down in Boston.
So then talk to us about this kind of rise of CMLL through the or of ROH through the pandemic, rising almost like, I mean, I really, the turnaround has been stellar. What do you kind of think? What do you kind of attribute to that right now as someone who's been really paying deep attention?
Well, it's funny because they came back and they just seemed like they had a whole entirely new focus on production mm-hmm. quality was the first thing that really jumped out at me. I mean, they had a weekly 1 hour show, but in that 1 hour show, I don't know who they hired, but they do these vignettes now every week that get you invested in the characters. And they would focus on just maybe two or three matches, but they've kept things consistent. They've kept mm-hmm. storylines growing. They've brought in new people. Of course, the quality of the wrestling has been great. So I think it's just been very consistent. They were super safe. Obviously, they treated the wrestlers well. So I'm sure the wrestlers are all mm-hmm. Singing their praises. I've seen it on Twitter. They love it. And yeah, what a great time to be a Mexican wrestler in Ring of Honor. I mean, you had Rush as the champion. He's got mm-hmm. his own faction. And then Bandido just beat him. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I can see why Dragon Lee is reaching out to more other guys to come on up. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're just looking on their big return now to live shows, too. They'll be coming yep. to Philadelphia in just a week or two, and they've got some stacked cards. So, mm-hmm. yeah, they've just, I think they've been doing a great job.
It definitely feels like, I love that you brought up the renewed kind of focus, because I feel like between the way the Pure Division has been kind of run lately, that is one place where you can really see that they know what people want from that division. Same with the women's division. The tournament they're running right now for the women's world title, especially the way they have their lead announcer, lead interviewer, Quinn McKay, as this kind of like fan favorite who is yeah. only in the tournament because the fans voted her in, like through a yeah. Facebook poll or whatever. Like, they're doing a very good job of, I don't think they always necessarily tell all of the stories the fans want. I feel like there is still very much, there is a push and pull with Ring of Honor. I don't know, because there does feel like, it feels like they have never been more focused, but it also feels like there are areas where they could be listening more. Am I wrong about that, Scott?
No, I think you hit the nail on the head. Sometimes it does seem like they're pointing you in a direction towards maybe like a certain wrestler mm-hmm. who's becoming popular, and you feel like they're building the momentum and they're going to maybe put the title on that one and run with them. But then they swerve you and they go in a different direction, and they'll have, mm-hmm. Like you thought maybe Brody at Final Battle was going to become the champion. Mm-hmm. That didn't happen. And then obviously Shane Taylor, I mean, who I could have sworn he was going to be the next guy because he'd been building so much momentum. That one really felt like a lost opportunity mm-hmm. for them. I think they could have generated a ton of buzz on that if they would have put the title on Shane. So yeah, it is weird. Like they're very consistent, but sometimes mm-hmm. it seems like they don't seize the opportunities that are presented to them that could really put them a little bit higher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's kind of the point that I was kind of driving at, because it does, I'm still at the point where I can't tell if Ring of Honor doesn't know who the fans want to be their champion, or if they are just really pushing into that WWE mentality of like, look, sometimes you need a dominant champion to make the future wins down the road that much sweeter. So it's there. It's still within the bounds of wrestling booking, but it does feel like there's that push pull with when you have such a not necessarily a small fan base, but a nicher fan base. You're going to need a little more listening. But it also feels like the Ring of Honor partnership with not just New Japan, but with all of the independent world in general has been a little bit more open. Like they flirted with exclusivity, it seems like, for a little bit before the pandemic. And now that you've got guys like Brody King and Chris Dickinson and a lot of the Ring of Honor talent running roughshod over New Japan Strong, it feels like the New Japan ROH relationship has never been healthier. And it also feels like there hasn't been, I don't know, I haven't heard too much from the New Japan CMLL relationship, but the pandemic has meant there's no room for Fantasticomania. You can't send people over for excursions. So it does feel like if anyone can heal that triangle, it's going to probably be New Japan when things finally kind of get back to normal. I don't know, Tama, what do you kind of feel? Yeah, is that the vibe you're kind of getting on that relationship?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think New Japan can be the one to help out with that situation when this whole world situation starts to lift up. You know, they've been CMLL has been real good to New Japan, vice versa. Mm-hmm. They've had a great relationship for how many years now? So, you know, it helps both parties to make this thing work. 100%.
Absolutely. And again, so much of the pandemic has kept people from being able to be in the same room that I got to believe that when people are actually able to talk this out, it might be it might happen. I mean, hell, if the New Japan Impact relationship is salvageable, anything is salvageable at this point, in my opinion. But no, like, because we just saw recently that New Japan former Young Lion now, Yota Tsuji, is going to be heading over to Rev Pro, despite the fact that he was very much like, I want to be a luchador, I want to head to CMLL, I want to be Lucha. But it does feel like he will be a better fit for Rev Pro. I don't know. I'm going to throw to Scott first. What do you kind of think of the idea of Yota in Rev Pro with the British promotion?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's great. It's done wonders for people in the past, so it's been great for him. You know, I'm excited for him, and I'm probably pronouncing his name wrong, but Umura, him, hopefully sticking with Strong. I mean, I'm super excited for that because the chances of seeing him on tour, I mean, that kid just looks like he's going to be a future star.
Right? He's going to be perfect for LA, especially if him and Ren Narita can kind of either butt heads or team up. I don't know. The two seem like they would get along very well. But yeah, Uemura is headed for the USA. Yota Tsuji headed for the UK. Gary, what do you kind of think of Tsuji heading to Rev Pro? Where, I mean, the last big excursion for Rev Pro was Okan. It was great. It was Tama Yukioka going over there, becoming Great Okan, now Great Okan. And so it's done wonders for especially the heavyweight New Japan Young Lions. What do you kind of think of Yota heading on excursion?
I feel like he could be the next Okan, honestly.
Yep.
Yeah.
I know exactly where you're getting at, because he got that same kind of like that. There is this passion in Yota Tsuji. But like it's you can't teach it. And Okan has the same kind of thing where like when he starts yelling at the crowd in those like giant proclamations, you can it's coming from here. It's coming from the heart.
He's got a bit of a size on him too.
Mm-hmm. You
know, he's got this like a structure. Like,
yep.
His stomach's big, but you can still see his abs.
Let's call it like it is. He's built like a brick shit house. Like he is Tsuji, especially in the UK, where like the UK is not, it's not a physically large wrestling scene. Like you got a lot of your smaller guys, and so he's going to be able to really, really learn how to become a giant over in Rev Pro. Because I mean, this is a country where Progress had to make an Atlas championship. They had a special championship for people over like 230 pounds, because that's how few like super heavyweights they have.
Well, you know, talking to the Uemura and Tsuji before when they were coming up. I thought it would have been the vice versa. I thought that Uemura would have been in
Britain?
In Britain, because that was the style he wanted to learn. Mm-hmm. And we knew about Tsuji wanting to go to Mexico, but he could have learned that out there in California for sure, but you never know, because you got all this time on excursion. How many years? It could go up to 3 years. So you got time to like be here one, learn all that, and switch. So yeah, that's the beauty of being on excursion, man. You travel and learn the styles of the world.
Mm-hmm. And he's going to get to cross paths with another young line who's currently an excursion Rev Pro, Shooter, the former Shota Umino. So that will be it will definitely be interesting to see Tsuji's growth as the next few years kind of go on. But speaking of growth, we've been kind of talking around it for the past couple weeks, because it hasn't been at the point where we can really be like, hey, this is happening, it's update the Wikipedia articles and everything. But now, after this past week on Impact Wrestling, Chris Bay,
oh, shit.
A prospect in the eyes of Jay White, of Switchblade Jay White, who I should mention as I'm delivering all this context, Switchblade Jay White, one of Gary's favorites here, which is going to make the next conversation that much more interesting. But Bullet Club prospect Chris Bay defeated Juice Robinson in a match on Impact, was officially given the Bullet Club shirt, and is now very much tweeting like he is a member. He's talking Bullet Bay and all that kind of stuff. And so it seems like we can now officially, I don't have an alarm, but we can finally sound the alarm, update the Wikipedia and say, Chris Bay, newest member of Bullet Club. I really don't want to, dance around this anymore. Gary, what are your thoughts on this?
I think it's bullshit. I don't see this guy in Bullet Club. I'm not gonna lie. I did my research.
Okay.
I just don't see it. And if anything, you put him with the junior weights, really. But
it about him that you don't like? I want to know. What is it? His shoes? His hair color? His what is it? His eyebrow? What is it?
He's just giving me this vibe. Like, I can't get down with him in Bullet Club. I just don't see it.
What does the vibe feel like? Is it low vibration, high vibration? What
kind Very of low. Low to the fucking ground. I don't
see it, man. Damn.
Wow.
Damn. All right. Oh, shoot. You know, Gary, you've always been a fan of Bullet Club, and anybody we brought in, you've pretty much been on board. This is the first time I've seen you show this kind of hate towards a new member, especially Chris Bay, which I thought was... it's a nice look. You know, he's got swag or finesse, is the term that he's using. He looks tight. He's jacked. He's in shape. There's a little swagger going on here. It's something that Bullet Club is looking for with these new age.
Gen Z,
the XYZ generation, man. Shit. Okay. This is the kind of stuff you guys like.
But I got one wrestler that can shut all this down. Ishimori. That's it. Ishimori.
What about him? He's in Bullet Club too.
Yeah, he's in Bullet Club already.
That's all you need. You got Ishimori and Phantasmo. That's all you need.
Ishimori is from the, I believe Ishimori was in the original class of the Noah Born from, like, this is not necessarily a young talent who you can be like, yeah, Ishimori is, don't get me wrong, he's a great wrestler, but great. If I'm gonna bank on the next 15 years, I'm not banking on Ishimori, because I think he's got enough. I think he's got five, he's got 10, maybe he's even got 15, but not at the level. He's a little too seasoned at this point. El Fantasma was very good, but he's already flirting with heavyweight. If you've been watching the Super Junior Tag Leagues, he's talking about how the junior division's gotten too easy. He wants to go heavy. So Bullet Club needs a young junior heavyweight. Chris Bay is, look, if you're, he is very young. And so there's
a
lot
of... And he's a brother! Come on, Gary.
First African American member of Bullet Club.
Yes, come on, man. We brought a brother into the club finally. You can thank Jay White for that. You know, I'm saying we that's your boy. Your boy brought him in. I thought you'd be happy about that.
Go against what Jay. Hey, he has a plan, so hey, I'm with it.
Yeah. No, and this is the we do have to give kind of Gary the benefit of the doubt here, because at the end of the day, Chris Bay is very young. Like he is a, it's, I, and I keep saying this in the happy hour, he's nothing but upside. Cause I think he's going to, I think like we're talking, if we're talking the next 15 years, I think he's going to be one of those guys who has a very good junior heavyweight life. And I think the minute that he goes to the heavyweight, it's also going to be a very good time for him. He's built like Will Ospreay. And so you can put some muscle on that frame. You can put some weight on that frame and he'll still be, churning out at the level that he's at right now. And I think most importantly, this, and I'm biased because I also am a musician. I love his hustle. The man is also working on an album right now that he's trying to release at the same time that he's joining Bullet Club. He's very much someone who I think if Bullet Club didn't give him a t-shirt, he would still have a great 15 years. But Bullet Club giving him a t-shirt, it's like how there's always a good prospect in baseball. But not necessarily are all those good prospects going to go to the Yankees. This is the Yankees picking up that great young prospect and not only saying, yes, we think he's going to do great things for the next 15 years. We also think he's going to do great things under our banner. And so it's almost more Bullet Club taking Bay is sealing him for me than necessarily the other way around. But let's throw to Scott now. What are your kind of thoughts on the new entrant into Bullet Club?
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. Like, I like Chris Bay a lot. I liked him before this. So I thought it was really intriguing. And I'm still intrigued by the storyline because, you know, I have watched Jay for a number of years. So I'm still not 100% convinced that this is the end of the story, that he's just in Bullet Club now. Like, is he using him as a means to an end? Is he, you know, he needs somebody to watch his back right there? Or is he actively recruiting like the next crop of Bullet Club? So it's either way you look at it, I like it. It's a good fit. I like Bay. Like you said, he's got swagger. He's got, you know, he's got the personality for it. So I'm definitely watching. It's one of the more interesting storylines I've seen on Impact right now.
And how about you, Tama? What do you think of the new member? What do you think of Jay White bringing in Bay?
Hey, and to cap that off, Scott, Impact can thank Bullet Club for that, bringing eyes to their product. And hey, thank you, Jay White. Thank you very much. But I like it, Scott. Mm-hmm. I mean, Ross, I like it. I like this new blood. I like this generation XYZ, whatever it is you want to call it. I like this new blood coming in, putting new eyes on the product. It's, hey, Gary, we got to invest on the future, man. We always got to invest, man. Because you know, this next 5 years.
I'm not saying I won't be on board. It's going to take a while.
And let's be real. The minute Chris Bay finally wins over Gary is going to be a huge moment. Like, I'm just saying.
He better not fuck this up. You don't get a free pass in the Bullet Club for nothing.
Gary, don't worry, man. We won't let that happen, man. You know, I like to think that. You know, Jay White is a smart man here, and you know, he's leading the charge on this. And now if he says a man is good, he's a made man. He can come in. We're going to watch out for him. The rest, you know, is up to him. So I'm all about it. I want to see more from this kid. I want to see what he can do, what he can bring to the club. I want to see what he, you know, I like to see him out in Japan. Come out, you know, tag with me for a little bit. Let me see what you're about. You know, let me test it. You know, I like it. I like this route, this new this route that Jay White's taking us. And let's see. I want to see more. I'm curious, just like Scott here. I'm curious. I'm curious what Jay is up to, man.
And let me know. And to further Scott's point, I'm curious what Chris Bay is up to. Is Bay actually, you know, because like we said, we bring this up a lot in. But there are cases of people joining Bullet Club just to get revenge. I mean, look at Kazarian. He was a member for like a week, but he wore the T-shirt. He got the, you know, like, so we will see where this thing with Chris Bay goes.
I'm lucky I wasn't there when he joined. I worked a lot of shit out of Kazarian.
He didn't really join Bullet Club.
Yes. No. And I'm really just bringing it up because it's my job to be a wet blanket like that. guys, yeah, hey, sometimes you need someone to poop on the party and I'm happy to help. But no, I think Chris Bay is going to be a great addition to Bullet Club. I think especially when you look at guys like Bay, Hikuleo, and all of the others that the and ELP that have kind of come in from that generation. I think I think the future is going to be real interesting. I think there's, I think there's bright things on the road for Bullet Club. But speaking of, since we're talking about Impact, since we're talking about Mexico, we're talking about all of these, we're kind of talking around some stuff. It's entirely possible Kenny Omega loses one of his many belts this coming weekend. We will talk about Resurgence in a minute because that is a big ass card, but also Triple Mania is taking place that same night. I don't know how to watch it. There are currently no ways to actually watch Triple Mania outside of Mexico, but Kenny Omega, Andrade for the Triple A Mega Championship. It definitely feels like this is the first real threat to Kenny losing that belt collector status. I want to throw it to you, Scott. I'm just going to do a quick, who you got, Omega or Andrade?
You know, it's funny, Ross. If you would have asked me this about a month or two ago, I would have said for sure Andrade, because I felt like this was going to start, you know, Kenny starting to lose the belts. I thought they were going to kind of move to this, to the Impact, you know, and so on. But there's been, at least as far as I've seen, there's been like no talk about this match. I mean, if I hadn't heard about it when it first got signed, I haven't heard squat about it. So I don't know if they're going to take a belt off of him without that much hype involved.
You do bring up a good point. This is one of those areas, the all the different partnerships AEW has, it doesn't seem to be coming through that, like, yeah, Omega and Andrade are facing each other. Andrade is more concerned with the Lucha Bros at the moment. Gary, I'm quick, yes or no, who do you think, Andrade or Omega?
I feel like Andrade's got this.
Yeah.
I feel like this is his time, you know. I mean, who would be left for Kenny to face anyway? Honestly, I feel like Andrade takes this.
I mean, if you ask Conan, Vikingo is right there ready to take on Kenny Omega. I know that's a dream match a lot of people want. But what about you, Tama? Omega, Andrade, who are you feeling?
The conspiracy theorist in me says that Andrade takes it because Kenny Omega is going to start dropping all the belts, and then he goes to WWE because WWE is doing that budget cut to save that big chunk of cash to buy him out. And that's a conspiracy theorist to me. But Kenny's leaving. Put that down. Tama Tonga says that. So, yeah. I don't know, man, to be honest, because I haven't heard anybody talking about it. I don't know why they're not pushing it. But then again, like, if you got Kenny as a champ, and if he's going against Andrade, and Andrade is like, he's not a top guy in AEW. He is, but he isn't, right? Because Kenny's how you going to like switch? How you going to switch that? How you going to switch that?
It's a very good point. I will, just to add a little bit of tinfoil to that hat that you've got me wearing now as well. Andrade's whole thing in AEW right now is that he's the face of Latinos. He doesn't want any other luchador to be able to say that they're the face of Latinos. And so he's trying to earn that. If he were the AAA Mega Championship, that would be a big, big notch on his belt to say, like, well, if you want to be the face of Latinos, come beat me for the belt. But I keep saying that Vikingo Omega match is too good to pass up. So I have no idea. It's really a toss up at this point. But I would be I'd be remiss if I didn't bring it up, because it's like you said, it's entirely possible this is where we start heading towards that end of the belt collector. It's entirely because, and you brought this up. I think I don't know when it was, but what else is there to do after being the belt collector for Kenny Omega?
Go be a clown in WWE. That's it. Go do your funny shit over there. That money.
AJ Styles was in a similar predicament where he was like, what else is there for me to do? I've been TNA champion. I've been NWA champion. I've been IWGP champion. I'll go take my victory lap in WWE. It's definitely an interesting idea. But that same night, New Japan Pro Wrestling returning to the United States for Resurgence. It's a hell of a card. All right, I personally have not been able to make a trip work. I have a because of my Crohn's. Well, you know what? I'll be completely open. I'll be completely open about it. I have Crohn's disease. I've had it since I was 11. Because of that, I'm on a medication that suppresses my immune system. But it also, and well, it has been working with the vaccine and all that. What it does mean is once a month, I have to go into a room with a bunch of other immune suppressed people in a hospital. And so I do have some considerations that I have to make when it comes to traveling, especially with all of the various variants that are out there. And so when I say that I'm not going, I'm not trying to make a comment on quality. I'm not trying to make a comment on the state of the pandemic. I have certain health considerations that I have to make for the people that share the infusion suite with me.
Hey, I'm sorry, Ross, but it was just funny the way you were trying to spit it out, man. It sounded like you were trying to make up an excuse. I've got to go use the toilet. That's why
I never know how deep I want to get into it, but there's the whole kit and caboodle of it. But it's an immense card right now. We've got a double main event, David Finlay challenging never openweight champion Jay White, as well as Hiroshi Tanahashi facing IWGP United States heavyweight champion Lance Archer. They just announced that Yuya Uemura is going to start his excursion in North America as part of a big old tag match that's going to be that night. But I'll throw you, Gary, first. What do you kind of think of this resurgence card as we head towards the 14th?
I feel like this is a great start for fans to come back. Especially mm-hmm. with the Lance Archer and Tanahashi, that's going to be amazing. And then the Jay White and David Finlay, that goes way back. So that's going to be amazing as well. Though, look forward.
Yep. Deep ass history. Absolutely. I'll throw it to you, Scott. What do you kind of think of the resurgence card? What are you most excited about?
Yeah, I think it looks like a super fun card. It looks like a great way to kick off everything. And now that they've announced more shows, this is just the beginning. So mm-hmm. I'm really hoping it's going to be a big show. Obviously, that tag match with the Good Brothers against Mox and a mystery partner, that's got to be a really intriguing one, too, to see who that's going to end up being.
Absolutely. I'm very curious. Very curious to see who that ends up being. I do got to bring up that it does feel like, because in the original push for New Japan of America, we were getting a lot of smaller shows. We were getting stuff like a lot of the tour was not necessarily the big type of events that I think a lot of people wanted them to be. They were very good shows. I mean, the Showdown tour in California with Liger's last match and the show at the Globe was fantastic, but you didn't have, you know, you didn't have the co-main events. You didn't have Tanahashi. And so it does feel like New Japan is not only coming back to North America, but they're making a big ass statement before this tour starts. Cause I remember the kind of traction New Japan would get before Madison Square Garden show, the kind of traction they got before the G1, when they bring the big events, ooh, people are ready for it. And now that they've actually got a North American brand that, you know, people can tune into weekly, it feels like those smaller shows are going to be even bigger now because of the fact that people are a little bit more familiar with what New Japan has on this side of the Pacific. Am I, Tom, am I crazy about that? Or does it kind of feel like a reorganization of how their approach to North America?
Yeah, no, I'm with you, Ross. I think that's what they're doing right now. They got to hit it, man, especially the way things have been going in Japan. You got to make your mark out here in America if you're going to push here, especially with New Japan of America. You got to make your mark. And this is the perfect time. Everything, you know, with wrestling booming the way it is right now, everybody's coming out of this this lockdown. This is a resurgence, man. They're coming out. And I think New Japan needs to make this mark. I think bringing out Tanahashi is great. I think that's going to be a great match with Archer. I'm actually looking forward to the Ishii and Moose match. I think that's going to be a banger. I really do think that's going to be a banger. The height difference is what tells me he's going to be a banger.
Oh, yeah.
that's what I know he's going to, you know. He's like Stone Pitbull versus Moose is literally like a moose, man.
I was going to say, we talked about being built like a brick shithouse earlier in these 2 minutes. Like, and Ishii gets vicious when he's the smaller guy because he's very much used to being able to have some size on the guys in New Japan. And so against a guy like Moose, it really feels like we're going to see some fireworks.
Yeah.
One thing I do want to point out, though, because we were talking about how, you know, Resurgence isn't just a big return event. It marks the beginning of all of these tours. When I first heard that
Using the internet without ExpressVPN is like driving a car without car insurance. Why would you want to take that risk? Any hacker can get on the same network, gain access to your personal data, and that's that. It doesn't take much technical knowledge to hack someone. Just some cheap hardware. Even an educated 12-year-old can do it. Let's face it, your data is valuable. Hackers can make up to $1,000 per person just selling your personal info on the dark web. So that's why you need to use ExpressVPN. It acts as personal online insurance that creates a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet. That means hackers can't steal your personal data, can't make money off you, and it's super secure. It'd take a hacker with a supercomputer over a billion years to get past ExpressVPN's encryption. It's super simple. All you have to do is fire up the app, click one button, and boom, you're protected. It works on all your devices, your phone, your computer, your tablets. You can stay secure on the go. So, Tama, tell the folks at home why you like to use ExpressVPN.
Peace of mind, Ross. Knowing that I'm protected with everything that I do online, with banking and whatnot, I love knowing that I'm being protected. I've had issues in the past, and with ExpressVPN, I know my data is protected. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/Tama. That's ExpressVPN.com/Tama. And you can get an extra 3 months free. ExpressVPN.com/Tama.
Y'all, we're going to be bringing in fans to this Strong taping in California. I was thinking very small because I was like, cool, Strong is going to be the show. They're going to bring people into the studio. It's still going to, we're going to have fans. But then when they announced that Strong is actually going to be comprised of matches that are going to be taking place over the course of the tour that y'all are doing, whether it be through Philly or the Dallas-Fort Worth area, actually bringing that touring show vibe to Strong is going to really be a, like, for lack of a better term, is it just a shot in the ass like there's no tomorrow? I mean, that is going to be some real gas in the tank for them. I know, Scott, you did you just get tickets for the Philly show, or are you're looking towards it?
Oh yeah, definitely. Day one, as soon as they went on sale, as soon as I heard they were coming back to Philly, I unquestionably had to get tickets, because, you know, I know it's going to be a great show. You know, who's going to be there, who can say, you know, and the last time they came out, it was just such a great card, and it just felt like, you know, you were witnessing a New Japan show in America. You know, it wasn't like an Americanized version. It was, you felt like you're watching New Japan, and I'm just over the moon excited and cannot wait.
It feels like it's going to be a big tour. Gary, what do you kind of think of the announcement that Strong is going to be not just a North American brand, but a touring North American brand?
I feel like it's a great start, you know, get fans back in. It's a good good direction for it. Hoping they come back to Georgia.
Yep. Yeah, it definitely feels like a lot of the route seems to be along the lines of where AEW's been. Like, they're doing the Garland, Texas show is going to be in that same area, and so it does feel like if AEW's running Georgia, we might be seeing New Japan in Georgia soon enough. But I want to harp on the momentum that's going to be able to give for the bigger North American shows, because I think before New Japan Strong, it was sort of like everything was happening in Japan. And then from time to time, there would be a big show or a big, like, few shows in North America that weren't necessarily capitalizing on the momentum of what's happening in Japan, just because it was more of a special event, one-off kind of thing. Whereas now they're going to actually be able to capitalize on the stories of New Japan Strong, on whatever kind of stuff happens as they hit the road over the course of the fall. I mean, it's going to be a big boon to New Japan of America. But we'd be remiss if we did all this talking. We've been talking for nearly an hour now. We got to talk about the Super Junior Tag League that's going on. More specifically, what's going on with the Tag League Superstars Sho and Yo Roppongi 3K, currently completely winless in the Super Junior Tag League so far. There are just a couple of matches left for them to get one of those wins. But the story has been Yo. Yo has been the losing end. he has been complaining in all of the New Japan, all the backstage comments that he's can't get his head right. He can't get his head in the match. He can't get his head in the game. Even in the non-tournament matches, he's the one that's been taking the pinfall just because he doesn't seem to be with it. And this is very eerily reminiscent of what's been going on with Olympic gymnast Simone Biles. And so that's why I kind of wanted to bring this up, because in a world where we're seeing her mental health struggles be brought up by Charlotte, be brought up by Max Caster as ways for heels to get easy, cheap heat, here we have Yo essentially going through what Simone has been going through. He has the wrestling version of the twisties. And so it's been a much more empathetic take on being relevant in wrestling, a much more of a show don't tell kind of situation. Scott, I see you grinning. You've been kind of keeping up with this. What do you kind of think of Yo's struggles right now in New Japan, and how New Japan is kind of handling this story?
I mean, you know, I actually have been hoping for those two to split for quite some time and go their separate ways, because I mean, you're looking at two more guys in that division, single stars. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I've just been waiting for this. So anytime something like this is teased, I'm hoping that's the direction we're going. So that's why I've been keeping my eye on it.
Okay. Yeah, no, I want to stay on that topic. Gary, what do you think of a possible Roppongi 3K split, Show and Yo going their separate ways?
I feel like that was teased. Like, once Yo got injured, all eyes were on the Show. And I feel like Yo could be maybe jealous he's not getting that much attention on him. Could be possibly. But I feel like a split is it's a long time coming.
Show has just
been putting in the work.
Yep. That was what I was about to say. It does feel like Show has been getting very frustrated with his partner's struggles. And as you put it, Yo was injured, and so that kind of put Show in the spotlight. It gave Show maybe a chip on his shoulder. I don't know, because it does kind of, the vibe I'm getting from Show right now is that he's like, he feels like he's being held back. He's almost treating Yo like this albatross around his neck. He would be this junior heavyweight superstar if he didn't have to carry around.
Do it. Let him. Show, go. Go, Show. Yep. Go it on your own road, Show.
I even say this as a Roppongi 3K fan. I do feel like splitting up would be so good for those two right now, because they started to develop separate personalities, I think they became too different. Like, Show is so high energy. He's got he's got much more of a mean bite to him now that he's been really studying MMA and getting involved with Gleet and their UWFI resurgence. Like, I could almost see this version of Show in Suzuki-gun. Like, I don't know where this guy has been. He's got that kind of edge to him. He's got that bite. And okay. Yo is very much the calm artist. I mean, listen to their theme music. It's very much, it's very much like hold music. Like, it's designed to keep you from getting too angry, you know? Yeah. Like, it almost feels like there's this push and pull going on between Show and Yo. I mean, Tama, what do you kind of think of what's going on here?
A very yin and yang. Like, yes, yeah. I agree with you. And I think it's time. I've been calling it since last year. They need to go on their own path to grow as wrestlers. Look, the tag team division is great, right? It's great to learn that and learn how to work as a team, work with other. All right. And you gather as much like arsenal as you can working as a team. Mm-hmm. But then like there comes that time when you gotta, it's like a baby leaving the nest, man. You gotta go. You got to go on your own. You got to learn this. You got to go on your own journey. You got to start your own shit. You got to be the champ on your own. Mm-hmm. Enough of the tag team. I'm feeling that way about G.O.D. myself. It's time. Ooh. It's time. Ooh, did I say that out loud? Oh, well, shit. Hey, what was I talking about? I'm just keeping it 100 with you guys.
No.
This pandemic has gotten me feeling a little anxious. Like, it's been great. I think tag team is great. I think everybody needs to experience as a professional wrestler. You need to go in as a tag team. You learn it. I've done the six man. I've done the tag team. I've conquered it all. What I haven't conquered is a singles run. Mm-hmm. And I feel that way for Show. You've done it. You're the tag champ. You've proven it over and over again. You can only play this record over and over so many times before you get tired of that shit. And you need to like play another record, man. You know, and I feel that for show as a professional wrestler, man. Go on your own road, show. Go on your own road. Go for it, dog.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. And before too many people in the chat jump on Tama's comments, if you have been listening to Tama's Island, I remember even like last year you were talking about like, you know, I'm thinking maybe singles at some point. You were flirting with it, even on the podcast, you were flirting with the idea of a singles run. Then when you went back to Japan for the tag run, especially now that you're 7-time IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team Champions, which is the most any team has ever been. It's not, I don't even, like, there are people like, oh my God, he's going to turn on his brother. No, there's just, what more is there for you and your brother to do? Like, because your brother's been right
along. American. It doesn't have to be American where I, like, stab my brother in the back, y'all. I can just be like, all right, man, I'll see you.
it can just be you and T going like, I'm a 7-time IWGP champion. You're also a 7-time. What more we got? Let's go do our thing.
Yeah.
I see people in the chat saying that it was a joke, but yes, no, it's worth bringing up. It's worth bringing up that not everything has to be mortal stakes. Sometimes, and I can't believe we're saying this in a world where the North American, the number one wrestling company, is trying to brand as sports entertainment. You have to remind people sometimes sports aren't, you know, life or death. Sometimes a football game is just a football game. And sometimes a wrestling match is just a wrestling match. Remember that as we head into G1 season. especially because like we just got done with Super Junior Tag League, where I saw people being like, oh, the Bullet Club tag team's taking on the Bullet Club tag team, something's gonna happen. It's like, no, they're gonna compete, and then when they're done, gonna be like, man, you hit me really hard. Like, it's sometimes it's just competition, sometimes it's just friendly
let me buy you a beer after we're done, huh? You know, that's all it is. Guys, we're going to wrap it up there. It's been a full hour. It's been a great chat. We want to thank our guests, Gary and Scott, for joining us. You guys have been great. Thank you, Ross. You've been awesome, man.
Thank you.
Everybody on the Twitch chat, thank you for joining us. You guys have been great. You guys, whew, that was a lot we covered. That was a lot of fun. Join us again next week when we come back Tuesday, 6:30 p.m. here on Twitch, Tama's Island Twitch. Or you can join us on these happy hours every weekend on patreon.com/Tama's Island. Guys, Ross just dropped an album. All right, go cop that album. I cop the album. Ross is quite the artist, man. I we're gonna have to talk about my entrance music, Ross. All right, when I go singles, all right.
you just let me know what kind of vibe you need, and I can get anything done, pretty much.
I'm digging your folklore, man. I might go on some folklore, but entrance music.
We'll get you some cowboy shit. It's real in right now.
But guys, thank you again very much for joining us today. Everyone, have a good week, safe week. Be safe out there. Go get vaccinated. Let's get this world back on the road, okay? Thank you very much. Join us next week again. See you. Peace, guys.
Thank you for listening to this week's Tama's Island. Find more great Tama's Island content like the Shotgun series, weekly happy hour Zoom calls with Tama, video versions of the podcast, and much, much more at patreon.com/Tama's Island, and visit @Tama's Island on Instagram and Twitter.